A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. It's time to remember that old wisdom our soldiers will never forget, that whether we are black or brown or white, we all bleed the same red blood of patriots.
That's President Donald Trump just a few minutes ago at his inaugural address. Okay, that was the first time I stumbled a little bit. Steve Bertrand here. It is the business lunch. It's going to take a bit. It's like writing new checks, I think. We're going to jump right into it because we'll be back and forth with different coverage. But I want to start with Paul Nolet. He is a professor of political science at Marquette University. And watch the address. And he joins us now to go through it a little bit. Professor, welcome to the business lunch.
Great to be here.
I should tell you that I lost a lot of sweat in Lalamere Hall over the years, so I know your office area very well.
That's great.
Let's just start. You know, I was going to start with the emotion of it, because there was that great scene on the Capitol where Donald Trump walked Barack Obama to the helicopter. Obama gets in, flies off. Trump goes back with Pence and the wives and watches them. And I'm thinking both of them are going through such extreme emotional moments there, one with great relief that it's over and the other probably feeling the weight of it. I don't know whose was more intense, that we heard from the president again, so I don't know. But what did you make of the day so far today?
Yeah, well, I think that one of the big things to remember about this is that all of this symbolism, I think, is really important. It's a key part of the whole process. And it shows a certain continuity with American history, too, the idea of a peaceful transition of power, even when you have two people as different as Obama and Trump. And so a lot of this symbolism, I mean, even with the helicopter that you mentioned, I
right.
think is really a key part of this whole thing.
It struck me, I want to play a little bit of this speech, but it struck me how much he sort of, in a way, talked about race and unity in the country.
When you open your heart to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice.
Donald Trump talking about prejudice in the country, and that is certainly something that many people look for him to sort of heal or salve in one way or another. I don't know. Were you surprised by the emphasis he gave that?
Well, I don't know if I was necessarily surprised, because one of his big messages, even in this inaugural speech, was America first. So this idea of populism and patriotism. But I think one of the challenges that he's definitely going to have is that really there are a lot of divisions amongst Americans now, and differences about what the public good means and what even patriotism means. So I think trying to bridge that gap, especially after what was a really tough campaign, and then even the last 10 weeks where Trump was president-elect, you know, it's been there hasn't been a whole lot of progress on the bridging divisions gap at this point.
That certainly is true. And he didn't do so much to bridge it today either. I was struck early on, and then he reinforced it with this clash of, you know, he ran against the Washington elite, Republican or Democrat, and yet those were all of the people standing around him as he took the oath and gave the speech. And then he sort of took them on and said he's taking an oath of allegiance to all Americans.
Yeah, that was quite striking, too. I mean, here he is in Washington, like you said, surrounded by politicians for both parties, and really talking about the people against the establishment. So in that way, it was a strikingly populist speech, but also one that I thought sounded kind of like a campaign speech, and much like what he voiced on the campaign.
Did that surprise you, or were there any surprises in this speech for you?
I think maybe one surprise that I had was that he didn't try to reach out to people who didn't vote for him as much as he might have. I mean, at the end of the speech, maybe the last quarter or so, and I think you played some of that excerpt, he did talk a bit about that. But I think a lot of it was really kind of speaking to his base supporters, the ones that were really fired up by his America First message throughout the campaign.
We've got 1 minute left, so I want to ask you very quickly. I was reading an article that you were quoted in, and it's about the opposition, sort of, you know, the Democrats in the minority in the Senate and the House. You said the challenge to the Donald Trump initiatives likely are going to come from attorneys general around the country, a very powerful one here in Illinois, Lisa Madigan. Explain that for me.
Yeah, and so state attorneys general have really taken a prominent role on the national stage in the last few years. And I think particularly in some of the few states where Democrats have some remaining political power, even after the 2016 elections, like Illinois and like California and New York, Massachusetts, I think you're going to see these AGs try to use their newfound abilities to really push back on a number of policies coming out of Washington.
It's the sort of thing that the Republicans sort of perfected, right? Look at the numbers when it comes to lawsuits against the government from attorney generals against Bill Clinton compared to Barack Obama.
Yeah, absolutely. And Texas, Republican Texas AG, now Governor Greg Abbott back in Texas, over in Texas, said, you know, my typical day is that I get up, I sue Obama, and I go home. And I think, you know, with Madigan and maybe Becerra in New York, you're going to see something similar coming from Democratic AGs.
Professor Paul Nolet from Marquette University, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand on this Friday afternoon. It's likely a bit chillier than it was in Washington. I don't know, maybe not. It's gray here, just as it was gray there. Let's go there now. We're going to talk to Kelly Riddell, who is a columnist for The Washington Times. Maybe you see her on Fox News and elsewhere. Kelly, welcome to The Business Lunch.
Thank you so much.
A busy day. I appreciate you joining us. Were you on the mall, or where were you for all of the festivities?
Yeah, I was this morning. I was on the mall, and then I came back to the kind of the warmth of the newsroom to watch President Trump's first inaugural speech.
I've been in a lot of newsrooms, Kelly. I've never described them as warm.
Well, compared, it's not very warm outside here in D.C. It's kind of gloomy, and it was starting to rain a little bit. So the rain, for the most part, has held off, but it's not exactly warm being out on the mall.
What did you make of the address?
I thought that it was an address that was revolutionary. Donald Trump rode into office on really the common man, the blue collar worker in the Rust Belt, and this speech spoke exactly to them. And you know, he went after the establishment. He was an outsider who promised change, and it's as the Bushes are sitting there looking on, as the Clintons are sitting there looking on, he basically railed against the establishment and promised to bring the American, the American average worker, put them first. So I thought that was amazing.
The Washington Post called it unusually negative for an inaugural address.
I disagree with that. You know, they also panned his convention speech. And I think that there's some real realities that we need to look at as Americans.
I want to interrupt you a little bit because I'm poking you a little. I know of some of the things you've written in the past, but let me just play a cut. And this is the one they referenced when they talked about it being negative.
This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
A reference to carnage and things like that. All right, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
How would you explain the murder rate in Chicago last year? Is that not carnage? Is carnage too? Is that too graphic a word to describe what is going on in the streets of Chicago?
Well, I think overall in the country, crime is way down, right? I
mean, not in the urban centers.
Not in Chicago.
Not in Chicago, and close where I am in Baltimore, it's also skyrocketed. The urban centers of Philadelphia, Washington D.C., we've seen a dip in overall violent crime rate, but the homicide rate has gone up. So it depends on what numbers you really want to use to prove your point. But I don't think anyone would say what's going on in Chicago right now is a good thing.
I'm getting no, of course not, absolutely not. I'm getting all of that to bring up something that you wrote in the Times. I think it was yesterday. The Washington Times, about the media and President Trump. And, you know, the reality was altered. I think it was altered when he came out and said, gave up the birther thing and said that he had given it up before. I don't know. But it seems like at that moment is when the way he was covered changed, that the media was more likely to say this is not true or that's true or blah, blah, blah. How does the media go forward now covering this guy who says some things that aren't altogether kosher?
I mean, they're going to continue doing what they've been doing since before the election. They're going to call him out on fact checks, and they're going to try to keep him honest. What they need to do is they can't become so apoplectic.
Right.
That all of a sudden, nothing that they say, they completely discredit themselves and devalue themselves. You can only be called a racist, xenophobe so many times before the people that you want to reach start tuning out. And for this country to become less polarized, we're so polarized as a nation, the press has really got to do a better job at covering things fairly. Like I said in my column today, that there hasn't been a positive press story about Donald Trump since he won the election. I mean, I went through Nexus searches. I just trying to find a light fluff piece on him or his family or something positive, and there's all these dark, negative, gloomy stories. And compare that to President Barack Obama when he entered office in 2009. I mean, the Washington Post did a story about his chiseled pectoral muscles getting out of the beach in Hawaii and how he was such a regimen of fitness. I mean, that's the articles that they were writing up before, you know, before Barack Obama came into office.
You don't want to see President Trump's pecs, though. You're not telling me that.
I know. I said
okay.
I didn't mention that. He's no swimsuit model.
We're running out of time, but I do want to ask you one thing, because one of the things that struck me, and my last guest, not so much, but I was struck by, he talked about, in a way, the racial healing or unity. We will rediscover our loyalty to each other. When you open your heart to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice. To me, that struck a pretty good chord.
Yeah, and especially how divided we are as a nation, and that I think that he's using this America First logo, slogan. This is what he fundamentally believes, and he's going to use that as a way of uniting the country. Now, a lot of these divisions will heal if he goes into office and actually starts to make things happen, to bring back the jobs, to go into these urban centers and make things better. And that's when we're going to get into the real coverage of Donald Trump and his legacy and his presidency, because I think his voters are depending on him and are going to value his presidency based on the results he gets, not the rhetoric he says.
Kelly Riddell is a columnist for the Washington Times. Kelly, great to talk to you. Thanks very much for doing it today.
Thank you.
You know, maybe this is the beginning of healing and bringing the country back together. It was, you know, very admirable of both of them to
get together and see
and
that
forward. Yeah.
That's Kim Gordon in the newsroom. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to The Business Lunch. Tom Gimbel, the CEO of the LaSalle Network, in the studio. Kim, if you want to just keep talking, we're going to
I'll just take over.
Gimbel and I realize that we both are just suckers for the pageantry of the whole
thing. It's the closest we get to royalty.
I said that earlier this morning, that this is as close as we have to a royal event. Mm-hmm. This and the presidential funerals, but we don't want those.
No, but it's the truthful, peaceful transfer of power. You don't see this in other countries.
No,
like
and
this.
You know, I was talking earlier too about the emotion and the moment that struck me, and you brought it up before I did, about when President Trump walked former President Obama to the helicopter,
mm-hmm.
right? President Trump walks back, former president's in there, and you've got to imagine there's this sort of great deflation on Barack Obama's shoulders, right? And then Donald Trump just being sworn in president. Which do you think was more intense, the emotion?
Oh, I think it's beyond belief. But I don't know if you heard the newscaster say that when Reagan left in 88, he asked the pilot, he said, can you do one more circle around the rotunda?
Yeah.
He didn't want it to be over.
Right. And right? I don't think Obama did that. It looked
no,
as
it looked
I was
like
trying
he
to
went,
follow him down the Potomac a little
but
bit.
But I think he's 55 and he's ready to be. I mean, I think that's a long 8 years.
He's headed to Palm Springs. I think they were at Joint Base Andrews and they're taking off there, flying on the same old plane.
But not Air Force One.
Not called
President
Air Force One.
It, right?
And the other thing, you know, they talk about moving people in and out of the White House. What I think it was Ryan Burrow up in the newsroom noticed that when Donald Trump took the oath, the picture on the Twitter handle POTUS changed from Barack Obama to Donald Trump.
It is, I mean, it's changed. It's done. I mean, this is the person right there on the TV screen that's running the biggest superpower in the world.
And there was a great culture clash on the steps of the Capitol, right? I mean, I mentioned this earlier as well, that Donald Trump rode the shoulders of the votes of the people, the little guy, into office, talking about draining the swamp and the media elite and the cultural elite and the political elite. And then there he is standing amongst them.
Yep.
To take the oath of office.
Well, and let's look at where the Electoral College and all the arguments about it is. It's to skew to reverse skew from the Northeast population
right.
to the middle of the country, yet D.C. is on the Atlantic coast right in the heart of it. And you can't get everybody from Montana and Idaho and right
no,
there.
No, but you can't. But I mean, even I'm talking about the elected officials and the former
for
presidents
sure.
and the. So tell me about that culture. Donald Trump wants to bring a new culture into Washington where there's been this very staid, long-term Washington culture. How do you change that? Or can you? Is it something you just give lip service to, or how do you genuinely make it different?
I believe it's twofold. And the great comparison is looking at what just ended and what started is, you know, in the early 90s, you had a Democrat in Clinton that took over, and they wanted to do health care reform, and Hillary Clinton was spearheading it. The time wasn't right. The culture wasn't right. When Obama came in 2008, the time was right and the culture was right. Right person, right time. And now we'll see if it's the right time for a culture shift. Now, it may not be. It wasn't in 76 when Carter came in. And it's the same thing in a corporation.
That's a good point. Right. Carter came in saying he was going to change it, right?
Right. And now you had somebody coming from, you know, you had the extreme right with Nixon, and then Ford was a moderate, and then it moved to the far left.
Guy who was walking on his own to save gas and all
yep.
of that, teaching Sunday school.
And it wasn't the right time for it, and it didn't work, and the country revolted in 80 to go to the right with Reagan. And I think now it's the same thing to the culture point of CEOs. You can bring in the greatest CEO in the world. If the timing isn't right for the market to change, you're not going to have success.
So no matter how strong the CEO is, she or he can't change the culture if the culture don't want to follow along.
I mean, there's an extent to that, right? The phrase, you can't change City Hall, you can't fight City Hall, is a phrase because it's true. Now, there's always going to be instances, the right person at the right time, but how you go about it. In corporate America, there's a phrase or a couple words called KIs. We talked about it before, key
right,
influencers,
right, right.
right? It's what Rex Tillerson can do at State. Is he right? Is Mattis, is he going to do at the Pentagon, right? It's the next layer down and how they get the people. And then there's going to be this layer, right? And I always call it the lieutenant layer, general, colonel, lieutenant. It's two layers down from the top, how those people behave and how they act.
There's a phrase, culture takers.
Yep.
Explain that for me.
So there's people that are on this, right? There's people, whether it was Obama or now Trump, that are in there because they just want to be touching, they want to be kissing the ring. They want to have their hand in and have an ear of the man or woman. And those people are just there to take. Now you've got the givers that say, we actually believe what we're doing is right. And whether it's in corporate America or in public office, my mission is to execute that. And whether I see the president every day or once every 4 years is irrelevant to me.
So if you're running a company and you have these people who give lip service to a new culture and then roll your eyes at you when you leave the room.
The worst, because those are the people that are coming in and using the .com analogy. Those are the ones that are drinking your beer and playing ping pong all day, right?
Yeah.
But they're not there to accomplish the project. And when people are complaining, they're not countering it. They're buying into it.
Right.
Those are culture takers. Those people are killing you.
How do you get rid of them? Just show them the door?
You show them the door.
How do you find them?
Well, that's the question is how far removed is the CEO? And if it's purely a delegation, you can delegate responsibilities, which I firmly believe in. You can't always delegate culture. And culture, what I always define it as, it's from where the top down meets the bottom up.
I like that. Yeah, right. Right.
So it, people expect it. Oh, if the CEO's here every day, well, I guess what? If you're a 10,000 person company with offices in 10 states, the CEO isn't everywhere every day.
So what you're telling me is Donald Trump takes this, takes the oath. He gives this speech that I am out there for you,
yep.
essentially not for these people standing behind me. But he can't make that happen without outside events. You can't force a culture.
Well, the question is, I mean, the Republican,
because I'd kind of like to see him succeed on that, right?
We all
yeah.
would. The Republican agenda is delegation to the states, right? So the question is, does the president actually build relationships with the governors of these states, Democrats or Republicans? Right?
Right. And
that would be an
right.
interesting thing,
right.
especially with the Secretary of Education that says it should all be in the states. Well, let's have the federal government have a relationship with the states.
That's Tom Gimbel, the CEO of the LaSalle Network. More at LaSalleNetwork.com.
Always.
I'll talk again next week.
I hope so.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, big doings in Washington, D.C. today. It is the inauguration. President Trump is at the congressional luncheon, I think, now. The parade is coming up. And, I'm very leery about taking anything away from him on this day today because this is his day. And I don't want to end up talking altogether negative about him. It's a big thing. But I do want to talk about this women's march that's going around in Washington tomorrow and in several locations. Ann Schollhammer is one of the organizers for the Chicago March, and she joins us now in the studio. Ann, welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So Well, last I heard, 50,000. How many people do you expect?
Right now, we have over 65,000 people that have registered.
So that means they've signed up online and said they're going to be there. Mm-hmm. Do you think that many are going to show up?
I think it will be at least that many.
Because, well, you know, we were talking off the air. It seems to me, bring that mic just a little close to you. It seems to me that it's easy to sign up and say, yeah, I'm going to do it, and then you don't actually show up.
I would agree with that if it wasn't going to be 55 degrees in Chicago tomorrow.
So you think it's going to, there'll be masses of people.
I think there will be masses of people.
What's behind it? Why are you doing it?
You know, it's really to speak out against the promises that the incoming administration, or the administration, I should say, has promised to take our rights away, our human rights, women's rights, immigration rights, religious freedom.
It started with the March on Washington, right? Mm-hmm. They had some trouble getting a spot. They ended up with a spot. Mm-hmm. And then these other ones sort of popped up around the country. Mm-hmm. Is it a national organized movement? Are you in conjunction with them, or what's the context?
We're really reflecting what their mission was. We have a little bit of our own goal, which has kind of grown up independently. And that's really to connect together in order to protect human rights by activating in your community.
It's called the Women's March. People have sort of criticized that, saying that it shouldn't be just about women, or that it is about more than women. How do you address that?
It's absolutely about more than women, because all of these issues affect women and their allies. So men are welcome to come.
How many men do you think will be there? 6, 7, 8?
I'm gonna say at least a quarter of the participants.
You think so?
Yes.
That'd be great. I see my friend Sarah Paretsky is going to speak.
She is.
I would go just to see Sarah speak, mm-hmm. I think. Who else is on there, and what are the highlights, you think?
So Kadeen Bennett from the ACLU is going to be there. Rainey Patrick from Independent Living is going to speak about disability. Katie Thede is going to speak from Planned Parenthood. The list just goes on and on. Kimberly Wasserman.
How will you measure the success of this? Will it be in the bodies there? Or what makes it? What will make it a success, or make it short of a success?
To me, what would make it a success is that over the next 2 years, women and women's allies really get involved, whether it's with an organization, whether it's looking to run for political office, whether it's speaking out about appointees to the Supreme Court. It's really about, you know, seeing these organizations that have deep roots in Chicago get more volunteers, more resources from the people of Chicago.
So how do you do that then? How do you convert, you know, boots on the ground, if you will, mm-hmm. into votes in the voting booth?
Well, that's really what we want to do by presenting this broad range of speakers on many, many different topics to get people to listen to the speaker for a few minutes, see if an issue reflects their concerns, and then push that out. There is going to be a volunteer career fair, so to speak, job uh-huh, fair, uh-huh. The end of February that we're coordinating. We're working in conjunction with a couple groups, so we'll push more information about that.
Are you concerned at all that your event might be co-opted by other protesters? Because I know there were a couple of events in Washington today. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who are angry. There are a lot of people who want to just make noise, mm-hmm. and they could really dilute your message if they do that.
I'd be surprised if they can dilute the message of 50,000 or 60,000 people, but we've worked very closely with both the city and also SEIU, Healthcare Illinois. They've been training marshals. We have almost, I think, 500 trained parade marshals, which will protect our parade, our march, and everything to really keep things.
Let's do some logistics then. Where is mm-hmm. it? Where do people go?
So the rally will be on Columbus, at the intersection of Jackson and Columbus.
Petrillo Banshell area?
It's right off of that, okay. Right behind there, literally okay. behind there. We're asking people to arrive on foot from the west on Balbo and Congress. And we're asking persons with disabilities and families to enter on Monroe.
So the rally goes there, and then mm-hmm. there is a march to Federal Plaza.
There is a march to Federal Plaza.
How many of these are there around the country?
There's over 600 right now is the last I heard in the world, all over the world.
Really?
Yep.
How does Chicago's expectation rank with the other cities?
We'll be one of the top cities outside of Washington for
And do you think,
attendance.
I mean, because I'm just interested in, you get this energy, mm-hmm. and then you've got to use it somehow.
Yes.
You can't just, like, people get on the Metro train and go mm-hmm. away. And that's why I wonder if there's a national organization or anything like that.
There's not a national organization. I think everybody kind of feels like there's so many good organizations in every town and every city, especially in Chicago, that have they already do this. Go do some work with them. And we've already heard about these groups already getting feedback from our marchers.
And, Ann Schulhammer is an organizer for the Women's March, the Chicago Women's March tomorrow. Well, I wish you success in that. I hope you know everything's peaceful, and I hope it's not raining, and I hope you get your message out.
Great. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Take care.